It's the Victorian Variety Show. Remember me as thou pass by. As thou art now, so once was I. As I am now, so thou wilt be. Prepare thy way to follow me. This is the Victorian Variety Show podcast, in which I focus on the Victorian era because I think it's a really fascinating historical period. But I also look at similarities and differences between this period and more contemporary periods, including the present day, because I think it's important to see how different periods of history are linked to each other. And also, I think it gives us a greater appreciation of our own history and of history in general. My name is Marissa, and the short poem I just read is taken from an article I found online called Grave Words, A Love Affair with Victorian Headstones, written by a mortician, which I'll include a link to in the show notes. Based on what Morticia writes, it seems like a version of this poem appeared on a number of tombstones, and the reason I chose it was that I felt it would set the tone for today's episode. I've been following Tracy Rylands of the Adventures in Cemetery Hopping blog on Twitter for a while, and I've been really intrigued by the work that she does. She posts photos she takes at cemeteries around the U.S., usually with some background information on the person, and often these stories are really interesting. I was curious about how Tracy selects these cemeteries and what her research process is once she focuses on a grave. So I asked her to come on the show, and I really enjoyed talking to her. I think you'll be interested in a lot of what she has to say. So, with no further ado, here's my interview with Tracy. My guest today is Tracy Muller Rylands, an almost native of Georgia. Tracy has bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Georgia. She didn't take an interest in cemeteries until 2012, when she became a photo volunteer for findagrave.com, an online database of cemeteries around the world. It was then that she began sharing stories from the cemeteries she visited via her blog, adventuresincemeteryhopping.com. A stay-at-home mom, Tracy lives in Dunwoody, Georgia, with her husband, Chris, and 15-year-old son, Sean. Tracy, welcome to the show. I've really been looking forward to having you on.
Oh, I really appreciate you inviting me to come on. I've been looking forward to it all week.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I got a list of questions that I wanted to ask you. But first, I was curious, how did you get interested in cemeteries and graves and visiting them?
Well, most people that you might run into in your line of work or interest will say they've always been interested in them, but I am not one of them. I did not have an interest in cemeteries really until after my son started kindergarten about in 2012, and my husband got me an Ancestry.com membership. I started digging into that.
Okay.
And Find a Grave was a tool that came out of that search for my own family tree. And I saw that they needed photo volunteers. They needed people to go out and photograph graves for people who could not get to say, and you know, your listeners may know how this works. If you say you live in like Georgia here and you have, you know, a great Aunt Frida who died in Arizona, and you know you're never going to go out there to visit her.
Right.
But you know where she is, you know, you look her up, but you see, oh, she doesn't have a photograph of her grave, and you'd like to see it, so you can request someone local to go out and do that. And I thought, well, that's something I can do. So I started doing that, and the very first couple of cemeteries I went to, the two I went to were actually connected. One was plantation owners, and the second one was the descendants of their slaves.
Okay.
And that just, you know, blew my hat off there, and the history that came out of visit, I thought, man, you know, this is really interesting, and I think I might not be the only one who finds this interesting, and I could use my writing skills because I have a background in journalism and English. And, you know, I started my blog in January of 2013, I think it was, And I've been doing it ever since.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. Like I mentioned, I was on your blog this morning. I have looked at it before because the pictures that you put on Twitter, you just put some amazing
Right.
photos on there and the history as well. That's just, I think, an amazing resource, your blog.
Well, it really is an adventure for me because I never know what I'm going to find.
Right.
It's different cemetery. It's never boring. And even, it's like, this past week I was doing research on a cemetery I visited in 2019 that's out in Oklahoma. And the gentleman was young and he had one of those Woodman of the World tree-shaped monuments. I thought, what happened there? He died in 1917. I thought, was he, World War One? But it turned out he had been a sheriff in Norman, Oklahoma, and he was murdered by bootleggers that he had pulled over in a traffic stop.
Oh, wow.
And the whole thing just led me down the road for an hour. And that's what I do this for. It's just, you just never know where it's going to take you. It's always something new.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. And to me, those are like the best kinds of experiences that you don't know what you're mm-hmm. going in for. I mean, there is a part of me that I do like to know what's going to happen. But then I also love, like, when I'm researching a topic for this podcast and I start off with something mm-hmm. and then I start going down a rabbit hole and then I ended up doing something else.
Oh, it happens to us all the time, I know.
How do you go about choosing where you're going to research as far as the cemetery or the grave? Do you usually have, like, I understand that probably you end up finding things that you never discovered, but when you're starting out, do you kind of have a place in mind, or do these cemeteries and graves kind of pick you, I guess?
I honestly have one of the most unscientific methods you can think of for doing this. When I was first starting out, I tended to go pretty local. I stuck around the Atlanta metro area because that was what was closest to me. And then I, started moving out a little bit. I went up to Rome, Georgia to go to Myrtle Hill because it's a really large, it's a rural type cemetery that's huge. It's, shaped like a wedding cake kind of with the different circles of like paths that wind up to the top. And then when I would go out, I started adding other stuff. When I went to out of town, I would stop, if I saw something I liked, or I'd plan, or when I'm on, even when I'm at home, when I go home, when I say home, I go to my husband's hometown of Knoxville.
Okay.
We usually stay for a week during the holidays, and I'll, usually pick a day where I'll look on the map and I'll see which ones I haven't been to, and I'll just pick one that's usually old, and because the old ones are always more interesting to me, and I'll just go take pictures, and it's not until I get back and I'm going through the pictures, and sometimes it can be years later, do I start digging into who's done what and start making those discoveries. So those discoveries can, as in the case of this last one I was telling you about, I visited that cemetery in 2019. That
Oh, wow.
was, three, and I'm just now, because I try to do it chronologically now.
Right.
And so I'll go back and what I did, and I'll be like, wow, that, I haven't been there in 3 years, but that's so it's very unscientific. That's terrible to say, but it's just kind of, where I end up and when. I was just up in New York City at the end of September and got to visit Greenwood and Woodlawn. And that was a specific trip that I wanted to take for that reason. But usually I'll be going somewhere and I end up at a cemetery as a secondary kind of thing. I don't usually go somewhere with that intention in mind.
That's interesting. I actually, when you said that your method is unscientific, I actually like your method a lot because I think, I don't know exactly what the scientific method for something like this looks like, but
right.
yours just seems to me like more organic. Like it's kind of, I think a lot of it depends on like the people that you find out about, maybe the time period. And there are a lot of things about scientific methods in general that I think don't take a lot of these details into account. Whereas I think a method like yours really brings in a lot to think about that you might not see with a scientific method. So I actually like your method a lot.
I'm glad. Well, I know that in this, and when I say this line of work, there's not a ton of people doing what I do, but there are some people who do this, that write about, you know, cemeteries and photograph, and they stick to their region. Like some people like to stick to their Eastern New England region or, you know, Southwest.
Yeah.
And people have said, you know, why don't you stick to Atlanta and Georgia? And I'm like, that's so boring. Why should I do that? You know, there's so many great stories and different styles of carving and places you can go. And I want to see it all. I want to do it all. And I think anybody who does this after a while starts to, I would hope, feel that way, because you don't want to limit yourself. You want to see everything. And
yeah.
I want to embrace all of it, because there are places I haven't been. One of my ultimate goals is to get to California and go do the Hollywood stars.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah.
I'd like to go see Errol Flynn. I want to see Forest Lawn, you know, what I can at least access, because a lot of it you can't see. But that, because I really love old movies, and that's, you know, and there's stuff out there that you can't see here, and there's stuff here that you can't see out there. So that's why I try not to limit myself and just kind of let it happen as it happens.
Yeah. See, I mean, I don't do this myself, but like if I did, I definitely would want something more along the lines of what you do. Whereas sticking to one region, I mean, of course I can imagine in one region there is a lot of material, but at the same time, I can definitely see how you would get bored after a while, and you would want to see how it differs among different regions and things like that. So yeah, I think the way you do it definitely sounds more appealing to me.
there's so much to appreciate in different regions.
Right.
Somebody had posted on Facebook today, one of my friends had posted, it was a statue of a World War I doughboy that was a monument over a young man's grave who had died in World War I. I was very surprised to see it was from Jackson, Tennessee, because we don't get a lot of those down here. For whatever reason, we don't see many of those. Well, and World War II, yes. World War I, we really don't. And,
yeah.
But up in the Midwest, I find them a lot more. And do I know why? No, don't really know why. But it excited me, because I'm like, oh, there's one down here. And that I really can appreciate the differences, because it's like, oh, that's cool. That's something I haven't seen before. Or, you know, it can get regional too. And there are people who, you know, I post things that I come in contact with. They're like, I've never seen that before. Where were you? And
yeah.
It's fun. It's for me, it is. Some people are like, why do you do this? I'm like, well, it excites me. That's why I keep doing it, or I would quit. So yeah, it's just, there's a lot out there to see, and I feel like sometimes I've even scratched the surface, because I've been to 25 states and I've got another 26 to get to, and I've got years to go.
Yeah, exactly. I actually was going to ask about what people say about what you were doing later on, but since you just mentioned it, what is the general, like, reaction, or I don't know if I want to say general reaction, but what are some misconceptions that people have about the work that you do?
I would say that probably the largest misconception is people think that I do this because I like zombies and the spirits.
Oh,
and that I do it for kind of the spooky seance-y Ouija board, you know, ghosts.
Yeah.
And there is a place and time for that, and the entertainment value and the history of that is great. But I really don't do it for that. I really love history.
Yeah.
And I love the history of architecture and the different eras of carving and the lifestyles that some of these people had and some of the really strange things that cropped up, like poisonings and how people died.
Yeah.
And just, it's just all, it runs the gamut. And when I tell people, well, don't really talk to the spirits when I'm out there, you know, they're dead. So
yeah,
they don't really talk to me. And I know there are people that do go out to cemeteries and feel that they do. And I, you know, I honor that. And I don't disparage that at all, if that's what people are doing. But for me, when I'm out there, it's just, I'm not an outdoorsy person. That's the only time I really go to the outdoors.
Oh, wow.
That is in a cemetery. And I can really feel, if anything, I feel just the peacefulness of being out there.
Yeah.
And And when people understand, get that, when I try to communicate to that people, to people, they go, oh, okay, I can understand that. And they get a little less like, oh, that's creepy. Cause I do get a few people who think it's creepy right off the bat. And I get that. It's funny. There's a distant relative of mine who immediately shut me down. I was like, oh, I'm never going to read that. I said, that's just gross. And then like a month later, I heard from her and she said, well, I looked and I was wrong. I was wrong about what you do. And it's actually not creepy at all. And she apologized to me. Oh. And I thought, okay, I won her over. So that's cool.
Like a lot of people, like when you say how peaceful it is, like they can understand that. Like what you do, I would like to do more of that one day. Like right now I'm not able to, but I originally am from New Jersey, and there was an old cemetery behind one of the churches in my town. And when I was in high school, I had a friend, and we would just go there and like sit and like just talk. And it was like so peaceful. We had so much respect for all the graves there. I mean, there were some graves going back to the 1700s and like the Revolutionary War.
New Jersey has some very old cemeteries for sure.
Yeah, and it's just, we first went there like to do some research and to check it out, but it just was like this really peaceful, serene place. The only issue that I had was, and I didn't know much about this at the time, I was like 16, 17 years old, but a lot of the graves had been abandoned, I guess, because the families had like long moved out of the area and disappeared. So like there were just a lot of weeds around these graves, which was like such a shame. And like, you know, I didn't really have the ability to do much as far as like cleaning them up or anything or maintenance, but it was just so beautiful being there. And just we just had such a feeling of peace whenever we went there. So I think when you let people know that, they do understand that. But before that, they tend to be like, whoa.
Until you know, it's funny when my husband and I, he was on an alumni board for his college for Oglethorpe University here in Atlanta.
Right.
We had parties, and you know, being a stay-at-home mom, I'm sure they were looking at me like, oh, she's boring, she doesn't have a thing to say. And they'd be like, well, what do you do? And I would, you know, pipe up about my blog, and inevitably I would get somebody who had a story for me about someone in their family or a cemetery they loved. And I would find somebody who really enjoyed talking about what I did. I always thought that was, you know, I can usually connect with someone on some level about what I do. If it's not the history, it's, you know, finding your roots, or it can actually lead to a pretty interesting conversation. And I didn't think that was going to happen when I first started doing this, but there are more people interested in it, honestly, than I thought would be when I first started doing it.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think sometimes people just, they grow up with this idea that death is not something that we like to think about. And then when they realize that it's okay to think about these things and talk about these things, then they tend to open up more.
Right. And I mean, I've always had, I'm not sure how to word this, but death has always been a part of my life, because when I was at college at University of Georgia, I was working for the Athens Daily News. And this was back in the 80s before computers were really taking off. And we still took obituaries over the phone.
Okay.
And on Sunday nights, from like 4 to 8, the local funeral homes would call me and I'd write them up. So I got to know the funeral directors pretty well. And I really liked them. And I really liked the approach they took to their work as a calling, as opposed to a job.
Right.
And they were really great people. And so I was used to that. When I got out of college, my first job was at an insurance company that sold pre-need funeral insurance. So,
okay. Yeah.
Like, more the same. And I met some more of the folks in the business. And so I got very comfortable with talking about death and funerals and caskets and all of that. And so when this happened, it was just kind of like the next step for me.
Yeah, it definitely sounds that way. Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned before that I did a few episodes on like Victorian death rituals and their beliefs about death. And Victorians, because there was so much death during the Victorian era, it was very common for Victorians in general, even younger ones, to like make plans for their deaths and their funerals and things like that. And I think that's something that we've gotten away from as a society. I do right. see more of an interest in that now, especially with, I don't know if you're familiar with like Caitlin Doughty or the Order of yes. the Good Death, mm-hmm. but yeah, yes. I think they've done a lot with kind of, I don't want to say normalizing it quite, but like just bringing out more to people's awareness that it is not only okay to talk about these things, but also I think in a lot of ways it's important that we start looking at these things from a different angle.
Yeah, I mean, it really has in some ways, in my mind, come full circle when you think about it, because what's being talked about now in some circles, not here in Georgia by any means, but you know, out in California and out in the Pacific Northwest is, you know, the notion of death doulas.
Right.
And bringing and having the deceased in the home and preparing the body and having people come and see the body in the home. That is not new.
Right.
This is what happened years ago before funeral parlors came to be. And especially in Appalachia, where there were no funeral parlors, that's what the family did.
Exactly.
The family prepared. Body. Somebody in the community built the casket, and
yeah.
it was all deeply. It was not, you know, shunted off to some guy, you know, in town who had a black suit and had some caskets, you know, in his showroom. It is coming full circle, and it's kind of interesting to me that we're returning to some of the practices that we left behind a long time ago in that thrust for modernization and moving forward, but moving, you know, backwards in the sense that, you know, maybe some of those ideas that were, you know, in place years ago were not so antiquated or wrong, that there's actually a lot of value to what was done back in those days.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's definitely good that some of these things are coming back. I guess I'm interested in all of the work. I noticed that like the graves that you cover are like I've seen a lot of pictures of graves from like the 19th century, but also the 20th century, and I think they're all fascinating. What are some of the things, you mentioned carvings earlier, what are some things that you've noticed about maybe carvings on graves from the 19th century and from the 20th century, like similarities and differences, and maybe any similarities and differences in like symbolism as well? Like what are some you've noticed in your, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot out there. Like, I know Victorian grave symbolism especially is, there are, like, so many examples of that. But if you can just maybe talk a little bit about some of the
yeah.
similarities and differences between, say, yeah. 19th and 20th century.
Well, can I go back a little further than that?
Oh, just absolutely. Absolutely.
But what's not about this is that I haven't been up to New England that much. I have been up to Maine, and I was able to go to Eastern Cemetery that's there, and they have some very old, like from the 1700 graves. And I've also seen similar styles in Charleston, simply because Charleston was in Charleston, South Carolina, their social elite were trying to keep up with the Boston and New England elite.
Oh,
so
wow.
They lured a lot of the carvers down from New England to Charleston with the promise of money and a warmer climate. And they're like, come on down, and we want the same intricately carved markers that our New England peers have. And they were willing to pay good money for it. And what's interesting that you see is, you see, at least here in the U.S., I can't speak to, you know, Europe or England, is that you start out seeing, like, I'm sure you might have seen these, in the 1700s, you have these skulls.
Right.
And you're like, why on earth would you have a skull and crossbones? And people are like, oh, it's pirates. Well, no, wasn't, not always. There are, you know, there is a time for that. There was some of that. But, you know, you start going through the styles. Well, the Puritans put skulls on their graves because they wanted to scare people, because they wanted to say, okay, if you don't clean up your act and live a good pious life, you're going to end up in hell.
Yeah.
So they put that bell in there to kind of scare you and go, straighten up and fly right, or you're going to end up like this.
Yeah.
And that was what the message they were trying to convey. They were not putting crosses and angels and flowers on their graves. That was not their purpose at all.
Right.
And that blows people's minds. And I know it blew my mind, because that's not something that even occurred to me. And then as you start getting towards the turn of, you know, into the 1800s, you start seeing these things called soul effigies, where you have like little cherub faces with wings coming out the side.
Yeah.
And or the who died, or they'll carve like as close as they can get to say the face of the deceased with these wings on the side, or they start getting a little more gentle and talking about, you know, the spirit going to heaven and leaving this earth. And then you start getting into, you know, the mid 1800s, and you start seeing the urns, because the Greeks viewed the urns as the repository for the ashes. And then the draping of the urn, meaning a veil over, you know, the last repository of the human spirit. It's the veil is in between the spirit and heaven. And then
right.
You start seeing willows and widows weeping next to the urn, and you start seeing more hopeful, you know, what we see today, angels and crosses and lily of the valley, ivy and wood. When you start getting into like the early 1900s with all of the tree stuff that you see, I don't know if you've seen a lot of that. I see a ton of this wood themed,
yes,
you know, woodsy stuff and tree shaped monuments, because the arts and crafts movement began,
yes,
in the 18th into the early 20s, because that was a fad that lasted a long time. And you see a lot of this wood stuff.
Yeah.
And that some of the most intricate carvings, because they were embracing that style. And then as you start getting into, you know, the 30s and 40s, frankly, to me, it starts getting a little boring, because it starts getting, you know,
yeah,
there's a cross, there's roses, there's, you know, angels and, you know, whatever you want on there. Heck, anymore, you can have your Harley Davidson carved on your marker now if you want.
Yeah.
Which is cool. but for the Victorians, and I know that's, you know, your era, you can, it's almost like you need a decoder ring to go out and figure out, well, what did that mean? And what does it mean when there's a hand reaching down and pointing finger down? Does that mean that person's going to hell? And is the pointing finger pointing up mean they're going to heaven? And what in the shaking hands and the, what does all this mean? And for someone who has not been around it, it can be a little overwhelming sometimes. And there really is a lot of difference there, but it's because, you know, as times change, history changes with it, and themes and the carvers change too. And they adapted to the mores and societal norms of the times, and moving away from, you know, religion to more pastoral scenes and things like that. It's interesting to see the evolution of the tombstone, because it has. It's evolved a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I've been kind of wanting to do an episode on, like, grave symbolism from the Victorian era. And it, like you said, it just... I still would love to, but it's just, there's so much information there.
And there's stuff you don't even know what it means still.
Exactly.
I couldn't tell you. You know, I mean, you're like, well, what did that mean? And why is that? Why is the, you know, I've had a few, you know, the finger pointing sideways. Well, does that mean you're not, you know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Just stasis or something? What does that mean? But, and there's, I cannot, you know, people ask me, what does it mean if there's Lily of the Valley? Well, I have to go look it up half the time, because there's so much of it. It's hard to create. And, you know, there's so many different lilies. There's, you know, Lily of the Valley, Calla lilies, Easter lilies. And I have to go look it up myself, because I can't keep it all straight in my head. But, you know, I'm sure the guys who were carving this at the time, they knew what it all meant. So they, you know, they did what was appropriate for the time.
Yeah. Definitely. What are some of the graves and cemeteries that have had the, like, the strongest impact on you? Like, the ones that really, like, just blew you away when you saw them?
It's interesting you say that. So, and I'm sure you've probably heard this from other people. If you, in cemetery circles, Bonaventure in Savannah gets talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, the book, because of Midnight Garden of Good and Evil. And I've been there twice, and it is very different than your average cemetery, simply because of the Spanish moss and the trees and the lighting on. It's next to the river, and it's very beautiful, and the light is just, it's just different there for whatever reason. And the bad part about it is, though, is that Bonaventure's almost become like a Disneyland cemetery, because so many people go, and they're on these tour buses. And the last time I went on a Sunday morning really early when they first opened, and there weren't many of us around, and the light was just falling in such a beautiful way. And it was just like, it's hard to describe. It's unearthly, almost. It's almost like you're touching the edge of heaven in a way, just because you know how much history is there and how much peace and quiet. But then getting, as time went on, I could hear the buses coming, and that's when I got out of there. Time to get out. And I went to Laurel Grove, which a lot of people miss, and it's just as beautiful. It's not on the water, and it looks a little different, but hardly anybody goes out there. But they have some beautiful statuary and mausoleums out there, and that's where I really like to go, because nobody bothers you out there.
Yeah.
And you just can kind of wander around. And, you know, Juliet Gordon Lowe, who founded the Girl Scouts, is buried out there. There's a Pierpont who's buried there, who wrote the words to Jingle Bells.
Oh, wow.
You can see his grave. Just, there's some white bronze out there. And Laurel Grove North is the white cemetery. And Laurel Grove South was where African Americans were buried. And it split down the middle with the interstate, with a road that was built in between them. But they're both beautiful.
Yeah.
And both have, of course, now, you know, they're not segregated now. Anybody who wants to be buried in either one can. But at that time, and there are some slave burials in Laurel Grove South. And I spent quite a bit of time in Laurel Grove South, too, because, you know, African-American graves have their own kind of style and way of that they did things as well. That's interesting to look at. So yeah, those are the two that I think of a lot. They all have something of value, but those two are really good. When I went to Greenwood up in New York, that's in Brooklyn, and it's a gorgeous cemetery. It's huge, and it has a lot of pastoral setting. It's got a lot of, you know, ups and downs and things like that. And that was, I would like to go back there very much, because I only got like 2 hours there, and that's not enough for cemetery hoppers like me. We need at least a day to wander around and see everything.
Wow. So when you were in New York, which ones did you go to again? Was it Greenwood, and what was the other one?
Greenwood and Woodlawn. And Woodlawn is in the Bronx, and Woodlawn has probably has the highest number of mausolea.
Right.
I mean, I was only able to spend an hour there because I had, you know, people I was staying with. Their time span for a cemetery only lasts so long. So I basically ran from mausoleum to mausoleum, taking pictures through the doors of the stained glass, you know, a lot of it Tiffany glass. And we don't have a lot of that where I live. We don't have a lot of mausoleums here in Georgia that have that many in one place. Oakland has probably 10 or 12. That's our largest one in Atlanta. Westview, which is also here in Atlanta, has a number of them. But at Woodlawn, you're talking upwards of close to 100, maybe more. It's just mind-blowing. And I could go back there easily and just spend, you know, a couple of days just peeking through doors. And I've gotten really good at smashing my iPhone up against the glass.
Oh, wow.
Through these doors, you know, sometimes they have screens and you have to just, oh, screw it. You know, this isn't going to work. But I've learned kind of how to do it. And when you look, that's the coolest thing, is to look in that window and see something just mind-blowingly beautiful that was created 100 years ago that is, that I'm sure even then cost a fortune.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's priceless. And it's like, you don't know what you're going to see till you look through that glass. And it's like, whoa, that's so cool. And I get to do that. I think it's very exciting. And I can't wait to go back up there to see more of those when I'm there.
That definitely sounds like just an amazing experience. Wow. Like, everything you're telling me is just just giving me so much to think about as far as like different areas I've been to and like different cemeteries. I was thinking of like in when I was in Louisiana, like I didn't really get to sightsee as much as I liked because I was mostly going to school there. But because of like the differences in the ground in like Louisiana and like like you ground. Did see a lot of like mausoleums in like New Orleans, but wow.
I've not been to New Orleans. I know that must probably be a shock to you. Everybody thinks that I've been there. And I'm like, no, that's where I'd like to go. And I had planned to go there in April of 2020. And I actually booked a bed and breakfast for my mother and I to go in at that time. And we were going to spend a week there. And, you know, COVID totally scotched that. And I still want to get there very badly because they do take it to a different level. I mean, the money spent and the carving and the symbolism. And I follow a young woman who's on Instagram who posts a lot from New Orleans cemeteries. And she had one that was a Woodman of the World mausoleum. And I'd never seen one of those. And it had the seal in stained glass. And I said, well, how many people are in there? And she's like, oh, there's probably 30. And I was like, wow. Really? I was like, I never eat. Thought of that, and you know, that totally blew my mind. And so I'm like, I gotta go see that. That's one I really want to see.
Yeah, definitely. Like I was in Baton Rouge most of the time, and I mean, there's a lot of history there as well.
Yeah, sure.
You could definitely spend a lot of time in Louisiana just between those two places.
No doubt. Yeah, it's like, well, I hadn't, and I know I have to go when it's not like boiling lava hot. And
yeah.
Like I either have to go before March or after, you know, October. So it's like somewhere in there. And because I have a 15-year-old, that's kind of hard to swing right now. And he's going to start driving next year. He's going to have his license. He's got his learners right now, but next year he'll be driving himself around. So I won't be the taxi service. So I'll actually be able to like go somewhere for a week and not have to scramble to find someone to drive him around. So
what advice would you give to somebody who's maybe interested in getting into cemetery hopping as far as like finding cemeteries and also like the research aspect? Like what advice would you give to somebody who like is interested in starting out their own venture?
Well, some people like to start like with their own family tree. That's kind of what I did. Even before I started writing, I was very interested in finding the graves of my ancestors because I knew very little about it because my dad did not want to talk about it. And you know, it's not like we had criminals or anybody in prison, but he just never talked about it. And
right.
I know more about my mom's side, but she didn't know past her grandparents. And I was able to go back. I actually went with her to visit that side of the family's graves in Kentucky, probably in 2010, before I even started doing this. Some people would probably do well to start with that, because then they can find where it's a lot more interesting when it's your own family
right.
than strangers that you don't know. But if you want to start local and go to, say, you know, maybe the best well-known large cemetery in your area, like here, that would be Oakland is one of the largest. And that gives you a good sampling of styles, sizes, different things like that. And that's a good place to start. Or if you want to take a tour, Oakland has tours. Westview has tours also. Those are two of our biggest. Or if you're living in, say, Boston, you can go to Mount Auburn. And, I mean, that's the first rural cemetery of its kind, park-like, you know, that started in the 1830s with the whole Victorian movement towards turning cemeteries from these churchyards that were busting at the seams because there wasn't enough room to bury people to these huge park-like environments where you weren't just visiting the dead. You were reading poetry and going on picnics and enjoying the outdoors while, you know, visiting graves, you know, or bird watching, horticulture, architecture. It's what attracts you personally, because there are some people that don't particularly like my husband. When he goes with me to these cemeteries, he goes around taking pictures of the flowers and the birds and the flora and fauna, and that's what interests him. And fortunately he does, otherwise I don't know if I'd get him to come, because he's, you know, not as interested in the actual graves themselves. But if he sees something that interests him, he will for me. But I would tell people to, you know, find your what interests you and start from there and just kind of take it from there, and it'll lead you. You'll find something that interests you and you'll kind of chart your own path. Because I would, you know, some people would find what I find interesting not so interesting, and vice versa. I do not like going to modern cemeteries. You probably know what those are, memorial parks that have
right,
all the flat
bronze.
And my husband knows better than to stop at any of those with me, because they're just boring as heck. Although there are sometimes you can, I like the portraits on people's graves sometimes, the pictures.
Yeah.
Those can be really interesting. My father's buried in a memorial park that's pretty boring, but I pulled back one of those, you know, covers on somebody's picture that was on their flat bronze marker. And it was a photo of her from the 20s.
Oh, wow.
When she was a young woman and she was wearing this beautiful hat and her hair was done and her husband's grave was next to her. And he was from the same era wearing a tuxedo. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You never would have known if you hadn't pulled back those covers what was there. So sometimes even at the modern ones, you can find something that's different. So, yeah, there's a little something for everybody, I think. I like to think anyway.
This is just so interesting. Like I could talk to you a lot more about all of this. I mean, I just thought of so many more things. This is fantastic. Thank you so much. I would like
you're so welcome.
I would like to give to open it up to you. Like, where can people find you? What would you like to promote? Like, I will put your bio in the show notes, but also like what links, what like. If you just want to,
people can find my blog is adventuresincemeteryhopping.com. That's where you can find my blog posts. I try to post once a week. That doesn't always happen, but and you can go through that and type in a search term. If you're interested in, you know, a certain cemetery, you can type it in and see if I wrote about it. And that's, you know, one way to go about it. I do have a Facebook page that's also called Adventures in Cemetery Hopping. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, and on my Facebook page, that's where I post pictures that I don't put on the blog or things that I see in between blog posts that just interest me that I don't include in the blog. So those are kind of extras that come up. Yeah, so I'm on, I have my blog page, and I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm not on TikTok, I'm not on any of that. I've just started doing reels on Instagram, doing these little videos, and I'm a newbie at that, so I'm still learning how to do that.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely check that out, but yeah.
Yeah. Now Twitter, my presence on Twitter, the interesting thing about Twitter is that there are not a lot of Americans doing what I do on Twitter. It's British people.
That's interesting.
Brits and Canadians and Australians. There's a couple of guys from Australia that I follow, but there are a number of people in England that post and cemeteries that post their stuff that I've gotten to know some of their people. And that's where I get to know more people outside of the country and in Canada.
Yeah.
I have a friend who he's a following up in Canada, and that's his job. He does cemetery restoration work. And I actually got to meet him when we went to Niagara Falls over the summer. And he took me around to some cemetery up there on the Canadian side of the falls called Drummond Hill. And that's I would not have met him if I hadn't been on Twitter. And
I think I know who you're talking about. I think we follow each other as well on Twitter.
Adam. Is like Canadian cemetery history. And
yes.
He is a nice guy. And we got to meet him and his wife, and he showed us around that cemetery, and we went and had lunch next to the falls. And, you know, I just learned so much from him, from what he knows. And he showed us around Drummond Hill, and that was, you know, I wouldn't have known where to look in that place. And he was able to show me what was, you know, of cultural significance and some history up there. So when you can make those connections, it's really nice. But yeah, Facebook's primarily my American people that I because there are some people that do, there are a lot of people who do it here, but Twitter, they don't seem to be around. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's because of the limit of the characters and typing stuff. But Instagram, I just started with earlier this year, so I'm just getting to know it a little bit at a time.
Yeah, I'm not sure sometimes what to put on Instagram. I put a lot of pictures of my dog and stuff like that. And today I posted one of my drawings. I just kind of post whatever comes to mind on Instagram. It's not like dedicated to the podcast or anything like that.
Right. I still am learning the hashtag thing because it's very much hashtag driven. You've got to put all this stuff so that you hit certain people.
Yeah, and, I'm bad at that too.
It's like I'm still learning how to do that. But what is fun with the reels is like the other day I had all these pictures of, you know, pointing fingers, and I just put together a reel of like 9 pictures of pointing fingers from different graves. That was just fun. It was just fun to do, you know, something random. And I didn't have to say where everybody was from and explain who was what and what the era was and all that. It was just, you know, pointing fingers. And that was, you know, that's something that Instagram does allow you to do that, say, Facebook or Twitter might not because of the visual aspect of that.
Once again, I really want to thank my guest, Tracy Rylands, for talking to me. I learned a great deal, and I think Tracy gave us a lot to think about as far as our society's current attitudes toward death and burial practices, and how we can learn a lot from how the Victorians and people from other periods approached funerary and cemetery customs. I will include a short bio with a link to Tracy's blog in the show notes, and I really hope you'll check it out to get a better idea of what Tracy does, and also to see if she's ever visited your neck of the woods. Because when I was doing research in preparation for this episode, I saw that she actually had visited a cemetery in my town a few years back, which I thought was really cool. And now, I want to know what you think. Email me at thevictorianvarietyshow@gmail.com or leave me a voice message at anchor.fm/marissa-d96/message. Also, because Twitter still exists and I'm still using it, you can follow me there if you don't already at twitter.com/victorianvariety1. And if you're on Mastodon, you can follow me there at is.noda.live/@MarissaD. Although, to be honest, I haven't really been on there lately. Actually, I've been so busy with a lot of things lately that I haven't really been on Twitter much lately, but Twitter is still my preferred social media platform, and as long as I can use it, I intend to. If you'd like to support the show financially, there are a few ways you can do that. You can buy me a coffee at www.buymeacoffee.com/MarissaDF13, or leave me a tip if you're listening to this on the Good Pods app or on my Linktree at Linktree/TheVictorianVarietyShow. And finally, I would greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Spotify, Podchaser, Audible, or wherever you listen, as that will help this podcast reach more listeners. Thank you so much for listening and for all of your support and great feedback on the show. I plan to be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode just in time for Christmas, which I'm really happy about. But in the meantime, I'm going to leave you with another short poem that I think fits in pretty well with the theme of this week's show. This one is titled One Seaside Grave and was written by Christina Rossetti, who I don't think I've discussed on the show yet, but I did discuss her brother, the painter and poet Dante Gabriel Rossetti, in my episode on the aesthetic movement earlier this year. Unmindful of the roses, unmindful of the thorn, a reaper tired reposes among his gathered corn. So might I till the morn. Cold as the cold Decembers, past as the days that set, while only one remembers and all the rest forget, but one remembers yet.